Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I'm not clear on how the emergency clause interacts with the operative date on the bill. I mean, if this bill were effective on the operative date, wouldn't you still be able to enter into rulemaking prior to that? And is there some confusion when we have an emergency clause that says this bill takes effect on passage, and then we say that these provisions don't take effect until March of 2005?
Chair Close, Representative Rosenbaum, there may be some confusion. However, the effect, the reason why we have an effective date and then an operative date, the effective date grants authority for the Department of Justice to and other agencies to begin writing rules. But the operative date says you cannot operate under the statute until March 1, 2005. I'm going to let Bill talk a little more about that.
Yeah, Chair Close, members of the committee, I think it's sections 333 to 335 at the very back. Those were worked out with legislative counsel. You notice that there is a section 334 placeholder applicability clause for existing contracts and existing exemptions, etc. And the plan is to try to have the measure effective with respect to the granting of authority to local contract review boards, local public contracting agencies, the Attorney General, and those that are affected by rulemaking requirements, to be able to get started on that, to have the legislature's grant of authority to start writing rules immediately. And yet the other provision will state that the law only applies to public contracts that are either advertised or are entered into, if they're not subject to an advertising requirement, on and after the 2005 effective date, so that you have one grant of authority to get the rules set up and in place, and then at the next magic moment those rules become effective, as well as the substantive statutes. So one lets the agencies jump into the rulemaking authority immediately, and the other states when we have to follow the rules established by this new law when we enter into contracts. I hope that's simple enough. Yeah, states our intent.
Okay.
Sections 193 through 331 can be summarized simply by this. 279 has broad applicability against all statutes, and when you make a change in 279, as in any statute, if you change something and there's a reference to it, you have to change the reference if you move it. So we've changed 279, and there are 138 other statutes for which we need to change the reference. This section, for Doug McKean at Legislative Council, who will be required to go through and find this, we owe him many cups of coffee and our thanks, because this is the hardest part and the hardest piece of work to do. The rest of it doesn't look easy. Well, this part looks as though it should be simple, but it is very, very difficult. So this is what this does. Section 132 repeals 279. Section 133 says captions have no force of law. And 334, 335, and 336, we've already talked about those. 337 establishes the operative date. I'd also like to take the opportunity to say that we have included language here, and it stands just in general common law to reason, that if you are entering into a contract, if you advertise a contract, December 31st, 2004, you send it out for the first time to be advertised. Why you would do that, I don't know. But if you decide to do that, that contract, for however long it will be in effect, will operate under the rules that are currently in effect at that time. Will operate under the old 279, all of that. It will, those provisions will stand for the length of the contract. The new law doesn't affect that. So what we have clearly said, that if a contract is advertised before the operative date of this act, that the old provisions apply as long as they exist. Because That's what law says, is that there is no confusion, and so we don't confuse bidders or agencies as to what law applies when. And finally, 338 establishes the emergency clause. And with that, Madam Chair, that is the conclusion of this short and easy little bill. We're happy to take any questions at this time.
Well, thank you, Jessica and Bill. You've done an excellent job of giving us a crash course in public contracting, which I, for one, needed. Representative Schaffer probably knew all about it, but and Gerard. Briefly, you've given us a packet of amendments. There's about 25 pages here, and you've alluded to some of those as you went through the bill. Do you want to just make a statement about the amendment process, how long you expect it to take, and so on, what you're working on?
Thank you, Chair Close. We, right now, are pretty close to having most of the pieces on the table that we know about and are working on putting those into an amendment form. The key piece for us right now is that we are working to make parties happy as we hear about their complaints. It is very difficult for us to do so if we haven't heard from people, and we'd like to assure the committee that as people bring forward their concerns, we either have been able to alleviate them by showing them the correct place in statute or are working on their concerns. The City of Eugene has brought forward several such concerns, and we are working with them right now to make those technical changes. We hope to have an amendment in our hands in 2 weeks. But again, the big piece of that amendment writing process is to fill in the sections on conforming amendments. Those have not yet been done, and those are very difficult to do, largely because we are adding some sections. When we add the sunset clause, that will add in a few sections. When we take out some of the placeholders, that will remove a few sections. And so you have to have the number of sections complete so that when you do the conforming amendments, they don't change. So that is a piece of this that is still coming together and will take some time. My understanding is we should be able to have that in our hands in a couple of weeks. And to the extent that we hear about other issues, we want to address those as early as we can to make sure that there isn't anyone left feeling like they're out in the cold or that they don't know what's going on or they wish they could have had a different set of language in here that would have fixed their problem.
Okay. So I would just say that probably by the end of February we'll have something that the committee could look at again. This is an ongoing process, so if there are concerns, I would direct people to go to the group that is working on this, Dugan and Jessica and Bill, with their concerns, and this bill we will put on hold then until we have the changes and can reconsider it at that time.
Chair Close, we thank you very much. And again, on behalf of the work group that's worked on this, we really appreciate the committee's time and patience and effort in this bill. We can't thank you enough for taking the time to listen to all of this and to work on this bill. We are thrilled that you've undertaken this challenge, and we look forward to continuing to work with you on this bill.
Are there any further questions?
Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Madam Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Merkley.
Just something that you might want to take a look at, because it's to make sure that it's all coherent, is related to the implementation. In your implementation clause, you have sections 1 through 91 being implemented in the 2005 time frame, but in section 93, it notes that section 91 applies only after July 1st, 2008, and then section 91 is referenced elsewhere, like in section 95, and which is going into implementation earlier than 98, even though it seems to be referring to the same public services that are in 93. Anyway, there's a lot of the implementation sequence that has to all fit, and I know that you're wrestling with that. That's just one that caught my eye as a very confusing piece.
Thank you, Chair Close, Representative Merkley. Thank you.
Take a hard look at that.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And have a good weekend.
You've earned it.
Okay, committee, thank you for your attention. This was, I know this is one of our, probably our biggest undertakings of the session. We probably won't have another bill that will be this size and scope. So I appreciate you bearing with us on this and going through it slowly and clearly. Now we will go to public testimony. First, we have, and we're a little early on this, I think we can go, we have 45 minutes probably, so we can go probably 15, well, no, it'll still be about 10 minutes apiece. So I'm going to call forward Nan Hine and Kim Krall of the Oregon Rehabilitation Center. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Nan Heim, and I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Rehabilitation Association with Tim Call, our executive director. We're here basically to support the provisions of House Bill 2341 that deal with the products of the disabled law and to explain our program, which has been questioned before this committee. Our members of our association are about 75 nonprofit organizations all throughout the state that provide jobs and housing to about 7,000 adults with disabilities. In addition, we employ another 6,000 people who act as caregivers in group homes, as supervisors at work sites, and in other capacities. And finally, we work with literally hundreds of private businesses as well as public agencies in providing jobs for people with disabilities. Our association did participate from the very beginning in the work group that put together House Bill 2341. And our reason for doing so was to prevent any substantive changes in the products of the disabled law. It is our lifeblood in providing jobs for people with disabilities, and it has been for 25 years. This law passed the legislature unanimously in 1977, and it is a cornerstone of the state's public policy that people with disabilities are not to be isolated in institutions or in communities, but are to be provided with supports and services that enable them to lead productive, integrated lives in their own communities. Because our direct state support is shrinking, these are frightening times for our organizations, for their employees, and worst of all, for the people whom we serve. Our main message to you today is to urge that you not make any changes in the products of the disabled law that might weaken it at a time when we need it more than ever. We are just a tiny sliver of the public contracting picture in this state. Both in terms of dollars involved and in terms of the numbers of contracts, we are way under 1% of the total of public contracts in this state. Nonetheless, that tiny sliver is absolutely essential to us. Some 4,000 Oregonians are currently employed because of the products of the disabled law on those contracts. Tim Call is going to address some of our specific concerns about possible changes in this law. He has worked with it from the very beginning. He's been in the field for 27 years. He's run a work program as well as a group home and has managed our association for a number of years. And after that, we'd be happy to answer questions. Tim?
Thank you, Nan. I'm Tim Krall, Executive Director of the Oregon Rehabilitation Association. Give you a very brief background of the history of this law. It evolved in 1939 as the Wagner O'Day program in the federal level to serve people who were blind because they needed work opportunities. In 1974, Senator Javits amended it and it became the Javits-Wagner O'Day Act to include all people with disabilities. That occurred about the same time we were putting people out of institutions into our communities and we needed work opportunities. That was happening in Oregon too. A number of states, most of them in fact, patterned their state laws after the federal Javits-Wagner O'Day program. And essentially it says if a product or service is going to be procured in the private sector, and a rehabilitation facility can do the work, then they get a shot at negotiating the contract. They don't absolutely get the contract, they get a shot at negotiating it. The need for this law continues today. As you know, we have thousands of people with disabilities in our state that are unemployed, thousands of people without disabilities unemployed. The recession has hit this bill, or this law, and our population as well. The laws remain flat. We haven't had new job opportunities, haven't had increases in this program in the last 4 or 5 years. The allegations that we listened to Wednesday from Sandra Bishop and some of the other people are nothing new. We've heard them the last three sessions. They have tried to introduce a number of bills to weaken the law. None of those bills has ever even been voted on by a committee. But because of the concerns they raised, Representative Loken created an interim committee. We spent a year and a half, or, well, 13 months, I guess, revising administrative rules. Oregon has the most stringent administrative rules around this program in the country, more stringent than the federal program. Requires an independent CPA audit to ascertain disability and the number of work hours produced. All other states are essentially self-reporting, not us. We get audited annually, and we participate in the development of that. We're not afraid of scrutiny, but we are afraid of having the law weakened. Compliance, as we see it in front of your committee, is not the issue. The issue is whether we get treated like everybody else in 279. We participated in that. We went because we didn't want anything to happen to the law. As you just heard Jessica Harris say, concerns are emerging from a number of sectors about the changes in this law, and they will be making amendments to ensure that those concerns are addressed. We don't expect to see huge sections of the purchasing law stripped out and put in another part of the statute, and we don't expect our provision in the law to be for that to happen to us either. We don't understand why it would. Purchasing agents use purchasing law to direct their actions. That's where our law is. That's where everybody else's law is. We don't want to be ostracized in some other section of the law, and we don't see any reason why we should. As Jessica said, they'll be back with amendments. If there's a concern that's specific that may have inadvertently changed the law, we'll be happy to address it. As it is, we're proposing that absolutely no changes be made to the law, our section of the law. I keep saying the law because it's just our piece, though. We believe strongly that there would be unintended consequences if we were isolated in a separate section of the law. And if the intent of the committee is to first do no harm, then we ask you to leave it as is. I've distributed testimony that responds specifically to some of the allegations and concerns raised on Wednesday. You can read those at your leisure. I know you have other matters to attend to, and I'd be happy to respond to any questions.
Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next we have... It's a little hard for me to read the writing. I see James Bradley, Jim Lazaski, and I can't read the first name, so please come forward. Oh, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, Senator, Representative Close, and members of the House Committee. My name is Emil Graziani. I'm the Executive Director of Garten Services. Garten is a qualified rehabilitation facility here in, located in Salem, but we provide training and jobs for people with disabilities throughout the Willamette Valley. And I brought two of our client employees with us today. Here's James Bradley, who's worked in one of our contracts that was negotiated under the Products of Disabled Law since 1977.
Welcome,
and this
James.
Is James, or Jim Pizaski. So James Bradley and Jim Pizaski is with me.
Good morning, Jim.
Morning.
Thank you.
And I apologize, but I forgot the... Would you... it's been a while. Wow, since I've been up here, so I'm a little nervous.
So are we.
Okay. We're in support of House Bill 2341 and leaving the law, bill as it was submitted to you intact. Garden Services serves well over 200 people with disabilities, receiving training and employment in one of our three main business areas. Those business areas were created as a result of parts of disabled individuals law. You may be familiar with some of them. The first one is our largest, which is our recycling program, and it was actually awarded to us outside the law in 1976 and rolled into the law in 1977. And for the last 25 or so years, we have been the provider of services to the state of Oregon and many political subdivisions for recycling. Some of the people coming out of Fairview Hospital and Training Center, and by the way, two of these individuals were housed there, had their first work experience in Garden's recycling program. In 1980s, Garden Services began cleaning state buildings, state and federal buildings, under both the Oregon Parks Disabled Individuals Law and the federal Javits-Wagner O'Day Law. We cleaned, for instance, the Bureau of Land Management building on South Commercial, and we just recently picked up the federal site, a federal courthouse in Eugene. We cleaned with people with disabilities. The third area is, started in 1984, Garden has continuously processed the state's outgoing first-class letter and large envelope mail for SALA-based agencies, again negotiated under the Products Disabled Law. The law works for its intended purpose, takes no extra state funding, and provides tremendous benefits for a segment of our society that experiences unemployment rates above 60%. As you can see from the contract areas that Garden has, the intent of the law is, and the actual policy statement is being followed. Long-term, continuous employment opportunities for people with disabilities. The Fair Competition has tried, as you heard, over the years to change the law or weaken it, and they have not had any success with it because previous legislators have valued the law and left it intact. You may ask why other organizations representing businesses have not weighed in on this same issue, expressing concerns that you've heard from that other group. Perhaps it's a non-issue for them, or perhaps those other organizations that represent many, many businesses throughout the state see this as the best alternative for providing jobs for people with disabilities. I know, Madam Close, and the committee members, you've been inundated with more information than on this particular law than you ever thought you were, especially when you look at how small the Products Disabled Law is within all of state purchasing. But it is monumental to the people with disabilities. It is their opportunity to become productive, tax-paying members of our society, and I ask you to leave it intact, and I'm willing to answer any questions you have.
Representative Kitts.
I wanted to state for the record that Representative Berger, who is your representative, has actively been in this committee. She's not here today. She doesn't serve on this committee, but she's been in my office and I'm sure several other offices on your behalf, and I just wanted to let you know that she's working very hard for you on behalf of this issue.
Thank you, Representative Kitts.
Other questions?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you
for coming.
Thank you.
Okay, next we have Salem Kaiser Public Schools, George Hall, LeVan Maskell.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. George Hall is unable to be here. My name is Marsha Latta, and I represent Salem Kaiser Schools, which is the second largest district in the state that serves 37,000 students. With me is LeVan Maskell from our purchasing department, who will share information about our purchasing cooperative and address our concerns related to the purchasing cooperative provisions in this bill. I would like to say that we've recently spoken to Jessica Harris, who has agreed to work with us to address our concerns and in the upcoming proposed amendments.
Madam Chair, members of the committee. Good morning. My name is LeVan Maskell. As Marcia said, I am the lead buyer for the Salem Kaiser Public Schools. I'd like to begin by thanking the committee members for working on the rewrite to Chapter 279. We believe this is a positive process and that it's provided some clarification and clear direction for all agencies involved. Our district has operated a purchasing cooperative for over 20 years now, and we serve school districts and political subdivisions throughout the state of Oregon. Participation in this program is voluntary. We do not charge a membership fee, and the members use only those services that they actually use. We believe that our main purpose in this cooperative is the prudent use of public funds. It's our feeling that language that's been written into this bill regarding cooperative purchasing is a bit restrictive, specifically in Section 27.2, where it states a joint cooperative procurement may not also be a permissive cooperative procurement. We feel that the language contained in Section 28 C and D that requires the vendor to have the opportunity to decline cooperative use of a contract should be added to Section 27 also, and that a joint procurement also be allowed to be a permissive cooperative procurement. We also feel in Section 28.2, the requirement for contracting agencies to advertise their intent to use a permissive contract is not cost-effective. It's a redundancy, as the original contract required that vendors be notified of its cooperative nature, and that this causes added expenses and delays to the contracting agencies who wish to use that. We feel that the accountability should be placed on the administering agency to ensure that all of the laws are adhered to and that contracting agencies be allowed to freely interact with those administering agencies. We believe that cooperation should be encouraged at all levels whenever possible between public agencies, and that we should be able to work together for the best public interest. Thank you very much.
And can I ask you, LeVan, have you talked with the drafters of the bill about these two sections?
We haven't yet. Jessica has agreed to meet with us.
Okay.
So we hope to do that soon.
Okay. Did you want to present?
No. I'm here as assistance if I can offer any. Can we answer any questions?
Questions. Representative Merkley.
Can you tell us in a sentence again, what is the difference between a joint cooperative procurement and a permissive cooperative procurement?
As it's defined in the bill, a joint cooperative procurement requires that we list all agencies who would be adding their quantities to ours, and that only those agencies be allowed to use that contract. We feel that this adversely affects districts that may not have received final approval for a project that would be related, and they wouldn't be able to take advantage of that contract.
So everybody has
later.
To come in at once.
Correct.
And under the permissive cooperative procurement.
We do not have to declare who the users will be.
I see. Okay. Declare, not declare.
Right.
Thank you.
Good question. Other questions? We appreciate you bringing this to our attention. In a bill that size, we cannot possibly see every area of concern, so we appreciate knowing this, and we will keep it in mind.
Thank you. Thank you.
Our last testifiers are Jerry Ager and Sandra Bishop, Fair Competition Alliance. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Close, members of the committee. Thank you for your indulgence. We should all be outside in this beautiful sunlight.
Is that a motion to adjourn?
We'll make this as painless as possible. We'll summarize a lot of things, but we have a couple of guests that have come quite a distance today, so we'd like to give them an opportunity to address the committee. For the record, my name is Sandra Bishop. I represent the Fair Competition Alliance. The Fair Competition Alliance is a nonprofit business trade association representing businesses and workers who are concerned about unfair public contracting practices in Oregon. We are here today to oppose House Bill 2341 in its current form. We oppose it because it inadvertently makes changes to, and it's in section 31 through 35 in your bill, it inadvertently makes changes to the Products of Disabled Individuals Law, which is ORS 279.835 through 279.855. It's a very short statute. In fact, I've got copies of it for you to refer to today. Let me get these over there. I want to narrow the context a little bit. You're getting bombarded with a lot of information and a lot of emotional pleas today. And I want to just narrow the context down. You're here talking about a public contracting bill. We are here talking about a public contracting bill. And what has happened is inadvertently, by including these two or three page statute in the larger bill, substantive changes are being made to that statute. And it's not overt or obvious what the changes are, but I'll sum those up at the end after we've heard from a couple folks. And one of the reasons, I mean, it's very interesting. We're here today. This is very important. You're making history today. You've got the Fair Competition Alliance and the Oregon Rehab Association asking for exactly the same thing. So be really clear. We are asking for no change in these statutes. We're not trying in any way to weaken this program. The program works very well if it is administered correctly. The reason we're here before you and the reason we've been working on this issue since 1996 is that you have a problem, and the problem is with the administration and the fact that DAS, Department of Administrative Services, has not properly administered this. There's no oversight on the program. So there's two things I'd appreciate you looking at quickly in the law. One of them is the definition, and it's under the very, very first section highlighted, subsection 3, under that definition. Disabled individual means an individual who, because of the nature of their disabilities, is not able to participate fully in competitive employment and for whom specialized employment opportunities must be provided. So what's happened over the years is the definition of disabled has basically been broadened to include about 10 to 15% of the total population of the state. That's the problem. And then if you look at the second page under the policy statement, 279.840, you have to remember this bill was put on the books in 1977. And in 77, sheltered workshops and activity centers had a very specific meaning. They were to employ and give meaningful, gainful employment to the severely disabled. And some of the examples we'll give you today will show that it's been expanded beyond that. So all we're asking, we know you can't solve all the problems in this today. We wish you could. But, you know, please indulge us, listen to the examples, and realize that what we're asking for is that you don't make any changes. And later, if we have time, I can go summarize my testimony from Wednesday, which you have in writing. I'm sure you have read that, but there are a couple points. Because this bill affects 2341 affects all public contracting, all of the changes in public contracting law in the first section apply to the product of disabled law because of where you've placed it in there. And we can explain that. And I would just advise you, in case we do run out of time at the end, you have received wonderful presentations from Ms. Harris, who is a layperson, and from Mr. Nestle, who is a Department of Justice attorney. And I would advise you to also ask the same questions of your own attorney. Department of Justice are the attorneys for another branch of government, and they're involved in lawsuits for which they need to limit their liability. So I would advise you also ask your own attorneys those questions from legislative counsel. Thanks.
Thank you, Sandra. And the attorney for the committee, for your information, is Doug McKean, and that is who I am working with on
right.
this bill.
Thank you. Mr. Egger.
Chair Close, members of the committee, my name is Jerry Egger. I'm the owner of Mid Valley Presort and also the president of the Fair Competition Alliance. And my comments are a result of over 9 years of experience. In 1994, I lost a contract opportunity under public bid under this program. And what really drove me forward to be here today is the fact that nobody could answer my questions. Why? I was low bidder. Why didn't I get that contract? And then I became aware of the Products of Disabled Individuals Law. But rather than say it's wrong, this is outrageous, I decided to commit the time, energy, effort, and resources to understand as much as I could as a small business owner why this was happening to my business. I learned that I wasn't the only one that was impacted by this program. It affected a wide range of individuals and businesses, and more recently, unions. The first review of this program since 1977 was conducted by the Secretary of State's Audits Division. And in September of 2000, they released a report. The problem became evident to me as we advocated for review was that there was no way for them to determine compliance by the QRFs that are operating under this program. And essentially, they realized that it was too complicated to use the statutory definition, so they decided to use something else, which is simply a portion of the definition. And the definition in statute states a disabled individual means an individual who, because of the nature of their disabilities, is not able to participate fully in competitive employment and for whom specialized employment opportunities must be provided. In January 2001, the Fair Competition Alliance submitted a petition for declaratory ruling to DAS pursuant to 183.410 regarding clarification of certain aspects of the statute, including the definition and what competitive employment means and what the definition of disabled individual means. The director of DAS, Michael Greenfield, refused to clarify definitions and interpretations of the law. He encouraged the FCA to, quote, to participate in rulemaking concerning the QRF program. Today we heard from prior testimony a little bit about, well, we have this rulemaking process and we'll resolve all of these problems in rules. Well, I'm here to tell you today that I, as a small business owner in the state, who doesn't necessarily depend solely on public contracts, I deserve the right to participate in this process, and I was specifically excluded, as was the FCA, in DAS's emergency temporary rulemaking.
Jerry, let me ask you about this definition.
Sure.
You read the one that's in statute. Now, the one that's in the bill is different, but it's very, very slight difference. Mm-hmm. It goes from disabled individual to individual with disability.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Pretty much the same, but it is different. So mm-hmm. Can you explain to the committee what the difference is between the two?
The difference is a perceptual difference on the part of administration and DAS. If the definition is allowed to continue in that form, the confusion is going to even become greater. The current definition in the statute is identical to ORS 344.511 in the Community Vocational Rehabilitation Division statutes. And the term in the definition in that statute says it states severely handicapped individual. And the text of that definition describing what a severely handicapped individual is exactly the same as ORS 279.835's definition. So the concern is, with existing law and current proposed legislation, that more confusion will result. And it is our intent to clarify, and some would term it change, but that's not why we're here today. We really feel strongly for all the businesses in the Alliance, as well as individuals not yet affected by the law, that we have to come to grips with the reality that severely disabled people and individuals with all types of disabilities are important and they need to be considered, but at what cost? Do we replace a non-disabled individual with a severely disabled individual? Maybe. But let's decide what those terms mean and how they should be applied so that all Oregonians can really understand this process and the law itself. And that's the essence of the confusion that's affected me. And now, in prior testimony, it's affecting hundreds, if not thousands of people. And unknowingly, I might add. Because there's a huge learning curve to come to grips with what the law is and how it affects people.
So to clarify, are you saying that by changing the definition, it's possible that somebody who's severely disabled might lose a job to someone who is not as disabled because the definition's been broadened? Is that
I'm saying it's not only possible, it's actually happening. And it's likely, in our opinion, in my opinion personally, that it's going to happen more frequently. Although we requested to participate in rulemaking, DAS excluded the FCA, and our major concern with House Bill 2341 is that it seems to us that a legislator cannot read this bill and tell how it affects existing law or how it changes law. There are some gaps that I've seen, and I'm not an expert, and I can tell you I am not familiar with all the legal terminology that's used there. But I can tell you if this program is not clarified, it's going to have wide and far-reaching ramifications.
Madam Chair.
Representative Merkley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to clarify the emergency temporary rulemaking mm-hmm. referring to. Mm-hmm. We had testimony about this going into effect in 2005, mm-hmm. giving us 2 years essentially to put the rules in place. Mm-hmm. What is the rulemaking you're referring to?
The rulemaking I'm referring to was a suitability rule. Which, again, I don't have that in front of me, but it was the essentially the right of DAS to determine what's suitable and what isn't for purposes of procurement under the statute. And one of the terms, for example, and let's get back to definitions, that they used in this temporary rule was the term appreciable value. It was not defined or clarified. So that's one of the unanswered questions, but the significance of the emergency temporary rule is that it foregoes public comment in the process. So unless DAS chooses to allow somebody to participate, which in this example they didn't allow us, even though we're clearly an interested party.
So if I understand right, you're talking about rulemaking pertaining to existing statutes, not pertaining to HB 2341.
Correct. And the only analogous example would be if, in fact, it is an emergency rulemaking, as far as I understand as a small business owner, DAS would have the power and or the Department of Justice to cooperatively implement administrative rule without public comment in certain circumstances.
I would just ask if on this particular topic you could perhaps do a short memo for us describing what you're talking about and the circumstances and what it was your concern. I mean, in some ways it sounds like a concern about process, and you're saying you're concerned about that process being replicated in the future, and rather than, but there's also a substance element there, and rather than take the whole committee's time to understand that now, maybe you could just write it out for us.
I'd love to do that, and right. We will do that.
Chair Close, Representative Rick, I'd be happy to do that. We've been working in the same area of public contracting law exemptions for, I've lost track of the number of years, but since 96, and there's been a certain pattern of behavior, and we can certainly, on the part of DAS, as far as relegating or delegating or abdicating the responsibility, so we could certainly give you the background on this specific rulemaking, and that might help you to understand the larger picture on it, but we'd be happy to do that.
Thank you. I think it would be helpful to have it on paper because then we could also get mm-hmm. DAS's perspective on,
sure.
on the issue you're raising.
Please continue.
Over the past 10 years, hundreds of millions of dollars of public contracts have been exempted from competitive bidding under the Products of Disabled Individuals Law. Over the past 2 years alone, hundreds of union and non-union jobs have been displaced by contracts that we believe to be operating outside the law. For example, United Security of Eugene lost the Eugene Airport Security Guard contract in March 2002 to Security Solutions, a subsidiary of Goodwill. This is a case where actually United Security went out of business recently and went bankrupt because of this. The Portland Public Schools last year also created a major example of the abuse that we believe to be an abuse of the law by granting Portland Rehabilitation Center a contract to displace over 300 custodians. And at this time, I'd like to introduce...
Representative Gerard.
Yes. Yes.
Mr. Egger.
Yes.
I think your statement is correct that you did... PHC did replace 300, but I think... And correct me if I'm wrong, that when PHC got that contract, 300 new union members from the same union were hired to replace the 300 that were lost.
Excuse me. Chair Close, Representative Garrett, if it's possible, can we hold your question? It's a very, very important question, or observation, rather. We're going to hear directly from those folks, so if it'll just be, you know, 3 to 5 minutes, and then you'll get a fuller answer.
I'm sorry.
If that would be okay.
Limited to 10 minutes, so...
We were previously, because of the four groups that were to testify. However, I had considered ending the committee at 11 o'clock, so we are running out of time.
We'll quickly go. I want to apologize for not introducing our folks earlier. To my right is Mr. Larry Kirk, who's going to make a small statement, and then also I'm going to give my chair over to Tina Jackie. They're going to talk directly about the issue that Representative Garrard is addressing.
And we have about 2 minutes,
2 minutes
per person,
okay,
and then
good.
I'd like to leave some time for the committee to have
great.
Their questions.
And then Ken Cropper is also here to answer any questions. He's the SIEU Local 140 Union person from it.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Larry Kirk. I'm a displaced custodian from Portland Public Schools. The outfit PHC, Portland Rehabilitation Center, that replaced me is supposed to be an outfit putting disabled people to work. They are supposed to have 75% disabled workforce, and in reality, they're nowhere near close to this. The reality of this law is that PHC recognizes drug addicts and other people who have no real disabilities and disabled people. I'm sure the way this law that put me out of work is being used is not the intention of the law. I'm sure the legislators, when enacting this law, did not intend for drug addicts to take the jobs of their disabled American veterans. But this is the reality of the law. For as I stand here, or sit here speaking to you today, I am a disabled American veteran who served my country for years overseas. The lifetime civil service position that I held gave me a 10-point preference because of my disability. This was to assure that I had access to government jobs and a way of making an honorable living when I hired in. I'm sure that your intention is not to have disabled people lose their job and their way of making an honorable living. For I am not the only disabled veteran that I know of that has lost their income from this action. I know a man who is a decorated disabled war veteran that was directly affected by this job. Portland school boards replacing skilled custodians with contract to nonprofit claiming to be employing the disabled. I am here to ask you to oppose House Bill 2341. This public contracting bill would expand the law allowing these nonprofits to make more contracts and cost more workers their jobs. Do not let these companies that say that they are for the disabled rake in huge profits from public contracts by exploiting the few disabled people that they have working for them. I ask that you do the right thing. Don't allow this program to expand. The bureaucrats have no business expanding these contracts. Make these companies prove that they have the disabled workforce to fulfill the contract before they can bid on the contract. Control the amount of profits that these disabled organizations can make or hold in reserve. Maybe this will make them pay the few disabled people they have working a livable wage and quit dislocating our disabled American veterans. Please think about the sacrifices these brave men and women made for us as a state and a nation. Do not let contracting laws expand these illegal contracts. And if you'd allow me, I'd give you an example. The example is when they used this law to overdo the civil service law, they wrote in their bid that they would hire 318 disabled people. In actuality, they're not even close to that. When they're advertising for employees, they're not even advertising for disabled people. Their intention, they use the law to undo a law, but have no intentions of following the law. And that's not right.
Thank you, Larry. I appreciate that.
Members of the committee, Madam Chair, I am here to oppose HB 2341, the public contracting law. My name is Tina Jackie. I am a former vet. I am also a civil servant. I am also a former school custodian with over 13 years with Portland Public Schools. On July 8th of 2002, Portland Public Schools decided to replace over 300 hardworking custodians with a nonprofit company called Portland Habilitation Center. I am now unemployed. I know that the state won't support me forever. I love my job and the people I worked with. In the months since we were illegally terminated, I have heard shocking stories of incidences at the schools that we used to care for. For example, a low-pressure steam boiler allowed to run without water in it. Oil spills caused by janitors not turning off the oil valve before they removed the oil filters to clean it. Another example was a day lead person who came to work drunk. PHC told Portland Public Schools that this individual had been fired when in fact he was transferred to another school as a lead person where he was caught going off school grounds to purchase drugs. He was fired. He came back several days later. He cut power lines, energy, electrical lines, and phone lines, closing the school down for the day. That person has now been arrested and in jail. PHC represented to the district that their janitors would do everything, and I quote, everything that the in-house custodians did, we did. As it turns out, PHC does not change light bulbs. They do not unplug toilets. They don't climb ladders. They don't secure the buildings, unlike the custodians of SEIU Local 140. Please do not repeal or expand this law in any way until this outrageous behavior on the part of a nonprofit can be fully examined. I support the FCA's position for no change in this law, as well as holding the Department of Administrative Services accountable for their mismanagement of the law. Thank you.
Can I ask a question?
One more question, Representative Merkley.
Yes, thank you for your testimony. Well, as I'm listening to you, I'm hearing you describe a situation that's occurring under the existing law, not the law that we're considering implementing. What we're wrestling with is understanding the connection between the two, because as far as we've been able to tell, the law, this, what we have before us is simply a reformulation of existing law, not an expansion. And the things that you're talking about, however real they may be, are under existing law. So it really sounds to me like you, rather than keeping the existing law, what you're advocating for is to change the existing law.
The existing law needs to be reexamined, yes, but I don't say change it right now.
Or at least enforce.
Yes, at least enforce it.
I hear that. I hear that.
What's your question?
My question is that's what I'm hearing from you is more that the existing law needs to be reexamined. But I guess what I'm struggling to figure out is how the reformulation of the law is actually part of what you're talking about, part of the problem, because this reformulation is unrelated to what you're describing.
Sorry, we're going to have to do a shuffle here. Chair Close, members of the committee, Representative Merkley, in answer, a specific example in answer to your question, in House Bill 2341, the way in which the Products of Disabled Individuals Law is included de facto expands that law and changes it. It wasn't intended. It's an unintended consequence. But if you look at Section 31, Subsection C, on page 22, starting with line 10, it appears to provide that not one disabled employee need work on the products or service being procured. For the exemption from competitive bid to apply, there only need be some other product or service quite apart from the contract subject where the same activity center employs individuals with a disability during the fiscal year to provide 75% or more of the work hours of direct labor of some product or service, because the 75% factor or standard is a must. It's a standard. It must be met for exemption to apply. This significantly changes and expands. It significantly expands the contracts that would be exempt from the competitive bid if the bill becomes law. So it's those kind of inadvertent things. It was not intended. We were also there at the beginning of the interim work groups in 98, and you know, everybody agreed this is too contentious an issue, as you can see. So shouldn't be changed. So we just need to continue to work with the committee, and we're working with Jessica Harris and Dugan Petty from DESC to make sure that there aren't any inadvertent changes in it. But right now, the way it stands, if it passed as it is today, there are changes.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Do we have one more person, or does that conclude? Okay, I want to give time for Representative Gerard's question. Betty Hatt.
I don't want to sit here in judgment of Portland Rehabilitation Center, but I would suggest, Jerry, that maybe what's wrong here is the attack on PHC not fulfilling its rights to the law, that the law itself is not wrong, but perhaps this organization was wrong, that maybe we're attacking the wrong thing.
Representative Gerard, it's a combination of both, and I can only say what's been presented to me, and we had a newspaper article, and there are other documents and specific examples that I'd be happy to provide to the committee if you have a specific question. And we have a tremendous amount of information over the past 9 years, and I believe it is a combination of both. It's a combination of the administration as well as the implementation, and it's directly tied to how the statute's being interpreted. But again, as I sit here today, the contentious nature of the issue is only going to get worse. And people are losing their jobs every day. Businesses are going out of business. And it's a very interesting situation where you have nonprofit unions and nonprofit unions and for-profit unions and for-profit janitorial firms, and a small for-profit non-union business such as the one that I own in Salem. So it's a very unique situation that's affecting a broad-based group of individuals and entities.
Thank you very much. We're about out of time. Did you have another question?
I just wanted, thank you, Madam Chair, to say, particularly to Larry and Tina, I want you to know that I really opposed the decision that the school board made to contract out your jobs. I think it was a mistake, and I still continue to think that to this day. I think I just want to let you know that what members of the committee, or particularly myself, are struggling with is that may be a separate issue from some minor changes that this bill is making. If I believed that there was anything we could do that would bring back your jobs, believe me, I would do it. But I'm not sure that in the context of this bill there's a way to address
that. They used the law of balance to force them to follow it. They submitted to the state that they would soon put 318 disabled people to work. They're nowhere near close to that. They're not even trying to get there. But yet I heard them today state that they have 7,000 disabled people that need work. If this is the case, why aren't all 318 of them working?
Last time I was in at the district headquarters, I saw half a dozen PHC employees. Not a one of them was disabled. No. Unless you consider not being able to speak English a disability.
Representative Schaffler. Very briefly, I want to restate what I agree with what Representative Rosenbaum said. I didn't like what the school district did. I don't care who got the contract, whether it be non-profit or profit. I don't want any government agency saving money on the backs of workers. I just don't think that's the right way to do it. And if the law, as stated now, is not being enforced, it should be enforced. We don't enforce the law. We make it and revise it and change and all that. And I've been laid off before, too. And I know it ain't fun, and especially in a climate like this, terrible. So don't think for one second that I don't have a great amount of sympathy for everybody in your situation. But as stated here far more articulately than I will, this issue is a separate issue from this, in my opinion. And I'm not saying we shouldn't return to this issue in another time and look at it, but I don't think it's in this right now. That's my opinion.
Okay. Committee, we are out of time, but I want to thank this panel for their testimony, and I want to say that as the chair of this committee, it is not my intent that we get into this fight over this issue, and that's why we are moving to take it out of this Bill 2341 and keep it exactly as it is for everybody who is disabled. I think it's important that we protect the law that they now have. And the question here is, does 2341 exacerbate the problem by expanding that definition? And if that is that's a possibility, then we need to take it out of the bill. So that's what we will be working on this committee, and we appreciate your concerns. And I don't think it is fair that they use people who are not disabled saying that they are. I think we would all agree on that. And so I want you to know that's important to this committee to work on that issue. I appreciate you coming.
Thank you.
Okay, if there's nothing else for the good of the committee, we will be going off House Bill 2341 and going on to other issues next week. So have a nice weekend. We are adjourned.
I wish we were going to get locked on Sunday.
Great.
Oh, sir. How are you? I will pour through it, and I will.